We're a white noise generator today.
Why?
We have this rain gently falling in the background.
It is super raining in Los Angeles right now.
And I think you can hear it in the mic, so it's like this is...
Wait, stop talking. Wait. A little bit.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, people, when they fall asleep and they put on, you know, tropical rainfores, it's that sound
of
falling.
We're the podcast that will make you fall asleep.
Yes, do not operate heavy machinery while listening, unless you're driving, in which case, what the heck. I'm
podcast of the cinema.
Yes, it is. I'm Alonzo Duraldi. I'm the film reviews editor for The Wrap and film critic and TV recapper for What the Flick on the Young Turks Network on YouTube.
I'm Dave White. I am your OG, and I will be respected as such.
Oh, brother.
It's my new favorite thing to say.
You cannot get over...
I cannot say that enough times.
Kanye on Twitter.
That is my favorite thing to say. Hashtag fingers in the booty. I'm so in love with this whole scenario, this whole situation. This is a conversation that we began on LKTV.
Yes, and we're still talking about it.
We're still talking about it. We have had a daily conversation about Kanye, Wiz, and Amber for the past 3 days, 4 days. I don't know how many days it's been. But since it happened, this has been our favorite thing to talk about.
Now, and
I'm sorry, this has been my favorite thing to talk about.
I've been participating somewhat.
You have been so kind to indulge me.
I did find an article that suggested that perhaps, like, we shouldn't revel so much in the emasculation of Kanye.
Oh, whatever.
But whatever. Yeah.
Listen. What we should revel in is the way the stripper shut it down.
Well, yes. Okay. He's been out.
She's amazing.
He's been out tweeted by Amber Rose. And in this day and age, that constitutes a major victory.
I mean, okay. So she did put him on blast.
Yes.
But
he started it.
He started it by being stupid. Yeah. And I say this as a person who loves Kanye West. I don't care what any of y'all think. I like this guy. I like his music. I like his grandiose persona. He is old school hip hop. He brags and brags and brags. That's 80s style.
Go listen to our Clue episode, our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife.
Indeed.
Knife, where you really break down the, what was that stupid video called?
Now you're going to make me... Now I'm blanking on the name
of it. The Uh-Huh Honey one. The one that I liked the Seth Rogen, James Franco version way better.
Yeah. The one that art critic Jerry Saltz talked about as an example of what he refers to as the new uncanny.
That was it, yes.
And it's just... It's an amazing article written by Jerry Saltz. It's totally on point.
Okay.
I am Team Kanye.
Here's the thing. We're bearing the lead.
What is the lead?
The lead...
Oh, LKTV, which you can now have for just a tiny outlay of cash.
That's right. It's an exclusive...
Right.
...to subscribers.
Yes.
And how, you may ask, does one become a subscriber to Linoleum Knife?
First thing you do...
Go to patreon.com.
Patreon.com.
Spell
Patreon.
Patreon.
Yeah.
.com.
Yep.
/ Linoleum Knife, all one word.
Go to our page. Go to just patreon.com and type in Linoleum Knife.
You could probably do that too. Search for us.
Go that way.
Yeah. And we have it. There's a video of us sitting at this table.
We've got a link on our Facebook page right now.
That's right.
To that page.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so we offer all kinds of levels.
Let's just break it down.
All right.
Let's just tell them.
So there's
this is a big event.
Yes.
This is a big deal. Yeah. Today is a grand day for everyone.
It's true. After 5+ years of doing this podcast, We
and
are
months of discussion.
Yes, we've been promising this for a long time, but now we are.
You know what? Everything is slow, and it takes a very long time.
Yes.
To figure out what you're going to do, to figure out how you're going to do it, to get people to help you out.
Right.
Like we have a friend who's designing the mug.
Mm-hmm.
We had another friend design us a T-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
That friend's name is Ed Luce.
Yes.
He is the creator, the comic book artist for the comic book Wovable Oaf,
which is great.
Available anthologized from Fantagraphics Books.
Yes, so he's for real.
He's a great guy. He's a great cartoonist. He drew our faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's so weird and hilarious.
We're
and
cartoons
strangely
now.
Accurate. Yeah, we are now cartoons. And have we posted that
image
on the
Facebook?
No, because
remember I need to get
to do a little,
a little
thingy.
Watermark.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Which that'll come within the next 24 hours. That's going to be up on the Facebook page. What just happened?
Was that thunder or something falling over?
Pause the mic.
One moment, please. Okay, so yeah, that was actually...
We cannot overestimate the level of wind taking place outside our home right now.
It just knocked around the cooler and the Christmas tree stand that are sitting on our
balcony.
The wind may carry them, who knows?
It blew over the food compost trash bag. There's kale on the balcony.
It shook the barley.
Yeah.
The wind did all the things.
What were we talking about?
After months of planning, we are now happy to take your money.
Here's the way it works.
Yes.
You subscribe at a level.
Mm-hmm. We have five levels currently.
There are five levels. None of them are all that much money. I mean, okay, first of all, let's say you're totally poor like a normal person.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you don't even have a job. Don't subscribe.
pay your rent.
You pay your rent, pay your bills, take care of yourself. When you get more money, then subscribe. It's
going
to be fine.
Yes.
You don't have to subscribe. Just don't do it. You'll miss LKTV. Whatever. We're talking about,
Wendy Williams.
We're talking about Fit to Fat to Fit.
This show, by the way, just we can't make this clear
enough. This is the highbrow show.
The podcast of the cinema
is free and will always be free.
Forever and ever.
Hence, that is why you are hearing it right now.
Yes. So this is gravy we're talking about, the extra show.
But okay, let's say you're employed. Let's say you are working poor.
Yes.
For example, you are a journalist. That's what we are.
A freelancer of some sort.
The working poor. That's us and maybe you. Your subscription level, $4 a month. That will give you 4 or 5 episodes of LKTV every month.
That's right.
$4 a month. And Patreon automatically takes it from you in whatever way you set it up.
You give them a credit or debit card number or a PayPal, and then they just, at the beginning of every month, they bill you whatever it is that you have pledged.
$4 a month. Then, level two is how many dollars? What did I put?
Is it seven? Why don't you go to the page?
Level two is, you know what I'm going to do? Go to the page.
Yeah.
Level two is... $7 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to read this.
Okay.
$7 a month. You get LKTV. You get all the future episodes of Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. And those will be arriving every other month starting February.
Mm-hmm.
We've been pretty laissez-faire about how often these go up, like when we have time.
Yeah.
When we get around to it.
But now
there will be six per year.
Now we're getting paid up front.
Yeah, there will be six per year, starting with this month.
Yes.
We're finally going to do Die Hard.
Yes. For Christmas.
And then you will get your choice of item. And there are three items that you can select from. A Linoleum Knife T-shirt. And if you are one of those great people who already bought a Linoleum Knife T-shirt, here's exciting news. This is a different one. That one was black with white letters. This one's white with black letters.
What?
Maybe you're not feeling quite so brutal on that Monday morning and you just want something a little clean and fresh and white looking.
maybe
to go under maybe a white shirt or something. You don't want a black shirt under a white shirt. You want things to coordinate and to match.
Maybe you work somewhere with lots of static electricity and right. you find yourself covered in lint, and a black shirt just That's shows that up all great. The more often. Not with this white shirt.
White shirt. We got mugs. They're being designed by our friend Graham.
That's right.
He's the guy who designs Massive.
Yes.
For opening ceremony.
Mm-hmm.
And he's getting me that design, and those are going into production.
Yes.
You'll be getting one.
Yes.
It's got like our faces or something on what, like the photo?
I think.
Of our faces on one side, and then the linoleum knife words on the other side.
Or something. We'll see.
There's a tote bag.
Yep.
You can pick one of those things. Tote bag, mug, t-shirt. Also, no, that's what you get.
that's
what you
get.
$7 a month. $12 a month, you get those other things, but you get two items. And at the $7 a month, I'm sorry.
At the $12.
At the $12 a month level, I'm going to screw this up talking about it. It's going to be very clear on the page yes. on Patreon, mm-hmm. but I'll make mistakes explaining it to you. At the $12 a month level, you get the new, very exciting, somewhat strange and weirdly accurate drawing of us by Ed Luce, who makes Wovable Loaf. It's like our crest.
Kind of, yeah.
It is a crest like you would find on a
coat of arms.
A prep school or a coat of arms or the Masons or something. I don't know. The Elks Lodge. A crest. An L, a K, a linoleum knife, your face, my face. I have been told that I look more like me than you look like you, but I think you look more like you than I look like me.
Your mileage may vary.
I think he's defatted me a little bit. I think I look a little more Rollins than me. Like, I have a big, giant tree trunk of a neck with plenty of avoirdupois on it.
Nice.
And I believe that the face of me
he's giving you a chin.
I have more of a yeah. I'm a little more aggro looking.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm already. I don't know. I think you look more like you than I look like me. I'm happy with how I look.
Sure.
It's like the aspirational me.
There you go.
You know, 20 pounds less of me.
Put that picture.
Thank you, Ed Luce.
Magnet that picture to the fridge.
Yeah. So, that's, but it's, I think I'm in love with this drawing.
It's so great.
And it's the new t-shirt design.
Yeah.
So at $12, you get that. Plus you get another thing. You could have the other t-shirt. You could have the t-shirt in the mug. You could have the t-shirt in the tote bag. You could have two t-shirts, whatever you want.
Mug in the tote bag.
You will also get, my audiobook.
Yes.
If you've already got my audiobook, you can specify that it be sent to a friend or an enemy.
Mm.
You will also be part of our new monthly club meeting.
Yes.
Because you have joined our club.
That's right.
And once a month, we're going to watch a movie, like streaming somewhere.
Yeah.
At a very specific time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are there at that very specific time, you can watch it with us. And chat with us while the movie is happening
mm-hmm.
and after.
Yeah.
It will be a club meeting every month for special people at the $12 per month level.
Also, at the $12 level, you get all of the past episodes of Linoleum Knife Presents More
That's
Linoleum
right.
Knife.
You get all the future and the past episodes yes. of Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife. At $16 a month, you get all that stuff plus...
But you get to pick three... of the tangible merchandise items. So whether among the Ed Luce t-shirt, the black letters on white t-shirt, the mug, and the tote bag, three of those four things can be yours at $17 a month.
And here's the extra thing. LK zines.
Woo! You remember zines, don't you?
Totally you remember zines. I made one in the 90s. It was called Handsome. It was not good.
It was all right.
No, it was not good. Very bad. Very bad example of a person who barely had started writing.
It was the zine from First We Loved.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what I still like about Handsome from What's back that? In the day? The clip art. Because it was straight up old school Xeroxed clip art.
You did have great clip art.
Thanks, Fort Worth Independent School District. Your Xerox machine came in very handy on my teacher prep hour. But now I'm a better writer and I'm a better zine maker.
And you still have that giant stapler.
Oh, yes, I do. And LK Zine number one is already in production. It already has a title. It is called Endless Donuts.
Well, all right.
Guess what it's about? It is a zine that has nothing to do with film or television. It has everything to do with nature's greatest food. You know what those are. And finally, at level five, $20 a month, you get all that stuff.
You get all four.
All that stuff. You get all four items.
Both t-shirts.
Both t-shirts.
And the mug.
And the tote.
And the tote.
But here's the most important thing you get at $20 a month. You get to participate in what we are calling LK Selecta.
I wish we had, I knew the echo button on this thing.
So that I could echo.
LK Selecta.
Here's what's going to happen. If you are part of LK Selector, we're going to select things for you. Four times a year, you will select two things.
Mm-hmm.
I will select two things.
Right.
This will happen like every 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to choose. I'm not going to use that other dreaded C word that everyone's saying all the time now, which is irritating.
Yes.
It should only be part of museums and galleries.
Yes.
We're going to choose things for you. Cultural objects. Books we're reading. DVDs we like. Music we're into. Perhaps some other thing that has special, you know, qualities that we love. And you're going to get that thing. We're going to ship it to you. You will have time to enjoy it. And then we're going to have like a Skype, Google Hangout, FaceTime, whatever it is.
Yeah.
As a group of people.
And talk about it.
And talk about that thing.
Yeah.
Live with us. And we stole this idea from another podcast, and I can't remember now who does it.
Some NPR shows do
it. Oh, really?
Too, yeah.
Well, I just like it so much because I like the idea of someone whose opinions I trust.
Mm-hmm.
And even someone whose opinions are not quite like mine, but who I respect as an opinionator.
Mm-hmm.
Pushing something on me. And saying, here, you need to read this book.
Hmm.
Because it's great. And you haven't, maybe you haven't considered this. Maybe you don't even think you might not like this.
Hmm.
But trust me, it's awesome. Finish it, read it, listen to it, whatever, watch it. And then we'll talk about it.
Yeah.
Over a nice cup of tea. Those are the levels. $4, $7, 12, 16, and 20. A cheap amount of money, a somewhat less cheap amount of money. That's it.
Yeah.
You're going to join our club, yo.
So we're super psyched about this, and thank you to everybody who's been nudging us in this direction for a while. And yeah, so our Patreon page is up and running. So if you can and wish to, please support us and join our club.
Yes. Furthermore, there will be other surprises.
Yes.
At every level, even the cheapest $4 a month level, there will be other surprises.
Goodies and treats.
I'm not going to tell you what they are. You'll be surprised by them.
Wouldn't be a surprise if you told them.
Goodies and treats. Let's talk about movies.
I have never been as envious of you, I don't think, in recent memory.
Uh-huh.
As when you
got... Or resentful.
That too. As when you decided that you could walk...
Let's just do the story. What did I say to you? How did it work? What was the scenario and what did I do? Tell everybody exactly.
All right.
While I close the blinds.
Okay. So, it may shock you to learn, gentle listener... that the makers and distributors of 50 Shades of Black did not see fit to screen the film in advance for critics. You'd think that they would be super proud of their work and really want the backing of the critical establishment. But they chose not to go that route. And so many film critics found themselves forced on Thursday night and Friday morning to pay a ticket to attend this film and see it. And so we were required to buy a ticket and attend a public screening of this film.
A public screening at which, it must be said, no one laughed.
None.
There was an audience for this film.
Yeah.
And there was no laughter coming from that audience.
You know, and this is the kind of movie where distributors will say something like, oh, we wanted audiences to discover it on their own. Or audiences
agree. Oh, they discovered it.
To discover it together.
They discovered they weren't laughing.
Yeah, exactly. So, which is code for, oh, you cold-hearted jerk critics aren't going to get this movie. But, you know, real folks, regular Americans, you know, will love this movie. Yeah, it was the silence of the tomb in there.
They hated it as well. I heard a couple chuckles over one line that I actually thought was a little funny, and it is a line that I cannot repeat.
Yeah. So at some point during this witless farrago of a movie, Dave White gets up and says,
I didn't get up. What did I do? Tell it right.
You tell it. I don't know.
I leaned into you and gently whispered into your ear. What did I say? I'm leaving. Here's why. We saw it at the AMC Century City 15.
Yes, which it turns out is adjacent to a Gelson's.
And in the bottom level of this mall, there's a Gelson's supermarket.
Yeah.
And I thought, I could go grocery shopping right now. And when I'm done, the movie will be done. And then we'll go home. So I'll get to go buy food to make some dinner and not watch the rest of this flaming dumpster fire of a film. Because it ain't even good bad.
No.
It's just bad.
No.
So despicably bad and lazy.
It's the kind of
Keep
movie.
Keep talking.
It's the kind of movie that you look at and you think, I guess that's a joke. I guess that's joke?
Right.
Question mark?
Yep.
Look, I've seen both A Haunted House movies, so I thought...
Me too.
I thought I had scraped
the bottom of that barrel.
Of the Marlon Wayans barrel.
During the first 20 minutes, I thought, why can't this be Little Man? Because Little Man is a terrible film as well.
Yes.
But it sure did make me laugh.
Yeah, well, you're weird that way.
And even White Chicks, which is another terrible Wayans Brothers film.
Yes.
It's kind of funny in parts.
Barely.
We're not going to talk about Scary Movie, because that was the moment when the lightning struck the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, the lightning struck once.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, the first Scary Movie, which is actually funny, has writing credits not just for Marlon Wayans, but also for Seltzer and Friedberg.
Who are bad human beings.
Yes. Who would go on to...
We don't know them personally.
No.
We're just guessing that they are also, in addition to being garbagey filmmakers and writers, that they must also be bad human
These
beings.
These are the guys that went on to inflict, you know, Date Movie and Epic Movie and,
Vampires Suck? Was that
Vampires
them as
Suck
well?
And Meet the Spartans. Boom. Yeah, on unsuspecting children.
Just
Anyway, so Marlon Wayans has gone on to make horrible movies on his own without their help. And this is the horriblest. I will say, I give credit to the cinematographer and the set designer because this movie does look often like 50 Shades of Grey. Like you can tell that they are attempting to recreate it for the purposes of parody. Not that parody or satire or spoofing ever really happens. In my review, I said these are simulacra because satire is putting too fine a point on it. Satire
needs a direction.
Needs a point of view. Needs has to have something to say about the thing that it is satirizing.
And this does the opposite.
This is basically, remember that movie you saw? We're going to remind you of that movie you saw. Because we're going to remind you of that movie.
Remember that time
you saw
that movie? Well, here's the same movie, only with stupid jokes that aren't funny.
Yeah. I mean, even if the random jokes that were shoved into this scenario were funny, it wouldn't matter that they weren't satirical or they didn't have anything to do with the original. But they aren't funny. And Airplane was 36 years ago.
Yes.
And, you know... they just keep trying to sort of resurrect this notion of like, here's a scene that looks exactly like that other scene, but, you know, and that's the level of humor.
How many times in the history of this podcast have I made the noise versus the amount of times you have?
This is one of my few, but seriously, this is...
That's the gravity of the situation.
That's what it's dragged me down to, the raspberry. This was just agonizing, and then worse. And here, you left before things really went south.
No, I didn't.
Oh, yes, you did. No, it got worse, because then you had to deal with Jane Seymour playing the racist adoptive mother, doing stuff like, at one point she tases the main woman in the film and says, I'm standing my ground.
Oh, my.
And then Marlon Wayans, you know, like, goes to pick her up and looks at his mother and says, Black Lives Matter. That's an actual joke in this movie. Then we have the flashback to the mother's friend who initiated him into sex.
Yes.
And it's Florence Henderson.
See, okay.
And it's Florence Henderson, not in the, like, recreating Basic Instinct on the MTV Movie Awards mode, which was funny and clever without being vulgar and crass.
Yes.
Here it's Florence Henderson being given very R-rated dialogue and for some reason agreeing to utter it.
Right.
And saying that, like, I thought all black men had rhythm and big D's.
Right.
Stuff like that. I'm like, oh, Florence Henderson, no. Yeah.
You know, you get the check, you get the script, but, you just do the
but
thing.
But I remember her on, remember The Surreal Life?
Yes.
There was that episode, there was a season where it was her and Tawny Kitaen and I forget who else. And there was one thing where they were all doing like a music video or something and Tawny Kitaen wanted to be like the sort of the sleazy nun or something.
Right.
And Florence was playing a nun and Tawny wanted to do something naughty and Florence was like, no, I was actually raised by the nuns and I'm not going to do anything that...
Yes, yes.
And I'm like, where's that Florence Henderson? You know, because this is just crass and it's... You know, I'm all for people sending up their own images and whatever, but it's so... uncannily vulgar and not funny.
It only took me 25 or 30 minutes to become filled with despair.
Yeah.
And to hate everything in my life. To consider divorcing you. And just cut my wrists right in the mall. I thought it was time to go. And I was right. Because you know what I did instead? I bought some delicious produce. and made a nice dinner.
You did.
So
I appreciated that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I had to sit through it to the bitter end so that I could review it for the wrap. And on the upside, today is the last day of January.
You know what all that means? That just means February movies.
I know, but I think February
movies... It doesn't get any better until March-ish.
Okay, well, here's the thing. I do at least know that in the next couple of weeks,
yes,
two movies that I'm embargoed from talking about yet are quite enjoyable and are something that I can say, hey, you should go see this. Right now, if anybody asks me what should I go see, all I got is Kung Fu Panda 3.
Which I did not see because you could not effectively convince me that it was not going to be
a repetition
of my experience with 1 and 2.
You had very high standards. Yeah, I mean, of course it's going to be a repetition
of 1 and 2. Why should I participate in a 6-hour franchise if part 3 is exactly like part 2, which is exactly like part 1?
It's not exactly like part 2.
And I liked part 1, and I saw part 2, and I liked part 2. But you know what? I don't need to know the rest of this story.
All right, If that's your standard, then
it is my standard.
Okay, fine. But I had a great time, and I really enjoyed it. And there is new stuff.
Say things.
Okay, so Master Shifu, the whatever little rodent-y thing that Dustin Hoffman does the voice of,
yes,
tells Poe that he has nothing left to teach him, and that Poe himself must now become a master of Kung Fu.
Right.
Which at first he has no idea how to teach or do any of that stuff. And then, meanwhile... this bull or ox or something in the spirit world, voiced by J.K. Simmons.
Okay.
Defeat has spent the last 500 years defeating all of the other kung fu masters in the spirit world and capturing their chi.
Okay.
Into these jade pendants that he now wears around his belt and can summon them as his sort of jade zombies, basically, to fight on his behalf. He battles.
That doesn't sound nice.
He battles the
last. He's the villain, right?
Yes, he is the villain. Okay. He battles the last of the Kung Fu Masters, who is the turtle who prophesied that Po would be the ultimate warrior.
Okay.
And so then he comes back to the mortal world to sort of, you know, wreak his vengeance or whatever.
Right.
Meanwhile, Po's biological father, voiced by Bryan Cranston, comes down from the mountain and wants to bring Po back with him to the secret panda village, which leads to some discomfort on behalf of Po's adoptive father, the noodle-selling goose. And the goose winds up sort of stowing away in Po's backpack as they go back to the Panda Village, yes. Where it turns out that Po really needs to go so that he can become a master of chi, which the pandas are supposed to be really good at, so that he can defeat the ox thing played by J.K. Simmons.
Yes.
And it's fun. It's funny, and it has some nice little, you know, kid movie messages about appreciating what makes you different and how that's your real strength and stuff without clobbering you over the head with it, because okay. Heaven knows we've seen that message a million times.
Right.
In my rap review, I said they sort of sneak it in the way like those mac and cheese recipes have squash in them that children don't notice. I liked it a lot, and I like the look of these movies. I think they're visually interesting. You know, there's the cool sort of split screen that happens during some of the fight sequences.
Right.
The way that it'll go from 3D animation to 2D and suddenly look like that it's, you know, calligraphy on a scroll or whatever.
Right. Yes.
I was reminded of Pompoko at times. I was reminded of Lost Horizon, just in terms of visually, in terms of the secret panda village being like Shangri-La. I liked it a lot. I had a blast, and I think people would, if you liked the first two, you would have a good time. I'm not saying you need to see it, Dave White, because it's going to be radically different from 1 and 2, but I think if you did wind up seeing it, you would enjoy yourself.
I'm sure I would enjoy it if I were to sit down and watch it. Yeah. I just, all the good reviews for it are simply that. They're good reviews. This is a well-made animated feature.
Yeah. It's not
giving you more of the same.
It's not groundbreaking the way that Toy Story 3 was.
Right, exactly.
But look, more of the same is what sequels aim for and so rarely achieve.
All right, well, that's fine, but I'm just...
I understand. Know. You know, actually doubling down and you know, that's a whole nother thing. But correct. Just even getting it right to kind of keep maintaining the tone... A lot of people screw that up, and these guys got that right.
I want to quickly talk about a film I saw that is most likely not coming to a theater near you.
Sure, why not?
It played for exactly 1 week in Los Angeles at one theater, Lemley's Royal, out on the west side.
During Sundance.
So, it's a Romanian film.
Yeah.
And if that sounds too esoteric for you, then what you need to understand is that in the past decade...
Google Romanian New Wave.
Yeah. In the past decade, what has happened in Romania is a handful of really cool filmmakers who have come along...
Post-Ceausescu.
And made some truly great films.
Yeah. 4 months, 3 weeks, and 2 days.
Which is harrowing.
Yes, but it was my number one movie of that year.
And of the bunch, my personal favorite, The Death of Mr. Lazarescu.
Yes, that's a good one.
Here's what happens in most of these new Romanian films. Bureaucracy messes with people. This is either comic or tragic.
Or both.
Generally both at the same time. In a way that makes you laugh and then say, oh, that's horrible. And that apparently is life in Romania.
Yeah.
Unless you are the cheeky girls and then you leave Romania.
Weren't they Transylvanian?
That's Romania.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken. Isn't it?
I guess. It's not a sovereign nation.
If someone knows something better than that, then you can let me know. But this is a film from I'm going to butcher the name. Corneliu Porumboiu.
Okay.
Okay.
Who did Death of Mr. Lai's Rescue?
No.
Oh.
No.
He did 1208 East of Bucharest?
He did.
Okay, I saw that one.
Also, he did Police Adjective.
I saw that one, too.
And he did When Evening Falls on Bucharest.
Don't know that one.
Or Metabolism. That's the full title.
Oh, you know the one that I still need to see of the Romanian New Wave is Tuesday After Christmas.
Yes. Yeah.
That's in the stack.
It is in the stack. It's sitting midway through Mount Unwatched.
Yes.
Anyway, so this movie is about a man with a wife and young child. And his neighbor comes to him and he says, I need to borrow 800 euros. I'm behind on my mortgage. And the guy says, you know, I don't have 800 euros. You know, we're struggling too. And then the next day, the guy comes back and says, okay, here's why I need the 800 euros. Apparently, there's a buried treasure in my great-grandfather's backyard. And I need to find it. Because it might be worth a lot. And if you help me, I'll give you half of it. If it's there.
Go.
So they find out that if it's there,
right,
and if they find it,
yeah,
and if it is sufficiently connected to Romanian cultural heritage, they must report their findings to the police, who will then turn the thing over to the authorities, which will then put it into a Romanian cultural museum or storehouse, and they will be given approximately 30% of its value. So they decide, screw that.
We're going to selling it on the black market.
We're going to find a guy with a metal detector. We're going to go hunt for this thing. The next 15 minutes of the film are spent negotiating with the guy with the metal detector. The next 30 minutes of the film are spent with them digging random holes in a backyard.
How long is this movie?
It's like 90 minutes.
Really? Oh, that's it?
Yeah, it's not long.
That's brisk for Romania.
It is. How do I describe the beauty of a dreary, bureaucracy-laden comedy about people who never break a smile and whose arguments are like, can't you go any faster? You shut up. Tell your friend to go faster. You tell your friend to shut up. Like, I had such a good time.
This movie is called
The Treasure.
The Treasure. All right.
And
it will be coming out on DVD this year.
It's
sure.
from, I believe it's from Sundance Selects, but it's not streaming yet or anything. I'm assuming what's going to happen is Sundance Selects, they're going to put it out on DVD really soon. Or Netflix really soon.
Okay. We'll keep an eye out.
There'll be a way for you to see this. And when it's available somehow, I'll talk about it again.
Yeah.
But keep it in mind because it is the first really cool movie to come out in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
And it is exactly the opposite of what normally passes for a January movie. It's a strange little movie from a country you don't normally think about making. Really cool films.
Speaking of what normally passes for a January movie, The Finest Hours.
Yeah, it's almost good.
It almost feels like an exercise that you would give to a film school editing class.
Yeah, fix
like,
this.
Take this footage and turn it into a movie.
Or take this finished movie and fix it.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like, because this right now is a pile of footage that doesn't work, even though it's ostensibly a finished film.
What's it about?
Based on a true story, which does not forgive it anything.
It makes me want to read the book.
Exactly. I'm sure.
I'm
sure
the thing that happened is a book about it.
I'm sure the true story is quite fascinating.
Yeah.
It's about this crew of
Coast Guard guys.
Yes.
Yes.
Who's telling this?
You are, and I'm helping.
This crew of Coast Guarders in New England in the 1950s, and there is a horrible nor'easter at sea. It's like February. It's freezing cold.
It is like a cataclysmic storm.
Yeah.
Like
the waves are so bad that it shears two separate oil tankers
in half.
And somehow...
Sorry to laugh. People died.
Somehow the half with the engine in it remains afloat, but barely.
Yes.
Like they're taking on water like crazy. So you've got that story of one of the tankers where Casey Affleck is like the engineer and he's trying to keep everything afloat, literally, and keep the sailors from trying to get into the lifeboats because they're just going to get smashed in 2 seconds if they try and get into that water. Then you've got Chris Pine, who is putting together the sort of Coast Guard B team, because all of the big, you know, alpha dogs have gone after the other tanker. So he's got this little tiny boat that's supposed to fit like a dozen people that winds up having to take on more than 30. And it's him and Ben Foster as a guy of few words.
Yes.
And that guy from Carol and the Big Short as a Navy dude who just happens to be there, who kind of volunteers to help out.
Yes.
And
Kyle Gallner.
Yes.
He's a young actor.
You've seen his face. He was in Red State.
He has an interesting face that you'll recognize, but you won't know why.
Yeah, he's a young that guy.
Yeah.
So they're like heading out to sea, but of course it involves, you know, getting past this giant wave thing that happens right outside the harbor, which apparently is impossible to get through, but then somehow they get through it anyway without any real explanation of what they did that's so different from all the other times that they couldn't get through it.
You guys, miracles.
Yeah. And then in story three, you have Holiday Granger, who was on the Tudors, the Borgias, one of those
Borgias,
shows.
The Borgias, I think, yeah.
She looks like the toast of RKO 1946. She's got one of those round faces.
She's so gorgeous.
Really beautiful in a classic Hollywood kind of way. Unfortunately, this movie has no idea how to use her, where to put her, or how to integrate her storyline and her romance with Chris Pine into the rest of the film.
She plays Lucretia Borgia.
Oh, well, all right.
Yeah.
So she is completely wasted by this movie that has no idea what to do with her.
I don't quite agree with you.
Okay.
Here. I feel like her role is absolutely underwritten.
Mm-hmm.
The editing of the film that constantly circles back to her drains the film of energy.
Yeah.
But it's not her fault.
No, I'm not blaming her at all.
Here's where I'm going.
I think the movie doesn't know how to use her or integrate that story.
In spite of that set of problems, she's giving a performance.
Oh, yeah.
As an interesting woman,
yes,
who will not be told.
Absolutely.
And every time she defies the people around her, they look at her like, what's her problem? and yet they do nothing. Like, she barges on through every scene she's in, and she takes that scene and makes you want to keep watching her. Makes you want her story to be something more than what it is.
Absolutely.
And
we're not disagreeing.
It is one of those performances where you watch the film and you think, I don't care about this movie so much, but I sure did like her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see an entire movie about her,
yeah,
but this movie doesn't know how to make her scenes jibe with all the oceanic rescue stuff.
But the most important thing is, seriously, it is as though she is from another time. Like, she looks like a person who should be 120 right now.
Yeah.
Because
she's Gloria Stewart in her heyday.
Yeah. Because she looks like someone who would be a movie star in the 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but the movie, doesn't know how to incorporate this interesting character and what could be a cool storyline, but it never meshes with the other stuff. Meanwhile, the other stuff isn't that great because, for example, you've got these guys out on a boat in February that are, I mean, they're going underwater in this boat. They're going through these waves.
Yeah.
And no one seems to be shivering all that much.
They're soaked. They're absolutely soaked to the bone. No one looks all that cold. They don't digitize anyone's breath until the last
at some point in Act 3 someone utters the word hypothermia and you're like, oh yeah
there should be that should be happening, but it doesn't seem to be happening
now.
It's technically got technical problems
yeah
where you don't quite believe that these guys aren't on a set.
Exactly.
Because that's where they are.
It's very soundstagey.
Yeah.
You know, and there's, you know, terrific character actors here in addition to the folks I mentioned. You've got Abraham Ben-Ruby and John Ortiz. It's directed by the guy that did Million Dollar Arm.
But who also started his career.
Lars and the Real Girl.
Yeah, Lars and the Real Girl.
Which I never saw, actually.
And here's what happens. Lars and the Real Girl is a really strange, unusual, interesting movie.
Yeah.
As well. And then Hollywood took him.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, here, take this. Here, well, take this. Well, here, keep working.
Yeah.
Keep working on these movies that aren't quite what you ought to be doing.
It's like Colin Trevorrow. You know, you look at Safety Not Guaranteed, and that's a funny movie that's unpredictable and weird and has its own sense of rhythms and such.
Yeah.
And then it's like, here, do Jurassic World, which anybody could do because it's so completely cookie cutter and stupid.
Yeah.
I'm sure Lars and the Real Girl was interesting, and this guy had it, and now he's just pumping out these really dull Disney, based on a true story movies. Not to say can't be good. You know,
Rookie, have a job, and that's nice.
The Rookie was awesome. I don't, you know, Disney can make these when they feel like it, but blech.
He's also responsible for Mr. Woodcock. Remember that?
Yeah. And then you saw an obscure John Ford movie this week.
I guess it's obscure. I mean, the fact that it's not Lost makes it, I guess, not so obscure.
Well, sure. I mean, John Ford is the kind of dude where it's sort of like Hitchcock, where even his little early films and his silent films, because they're John Ford, someone's heard of them.
Someone wants to see them again.
Yeah.
John Ford's career began in the teens.
Yeah.
And go to his Wikipedia page if you want to be depressed, because the first 10 years of 15 years of his career, this film after film after film after film, and next to it says Lost, 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 Lost.
But were they features or were they sort of like three reelers?
I don't know.
Okay.
Silent. They were silence.
Yeah.
And most of them were gone. Hmm. So here is 1930. Mm-hmm. It's called Born Reckless. An early talkie in every sense of the word. Very stage bound.
Camera lockdown.
Cameras. Well, until the end. When you get a touch of that, you get a touch of something that makes you think, oh, what's this guy doing? What's this director doing?
Hmm.
And what might he do in the future? It's a shootout scene where, like, they go through these swinging doors and then back out, you know.
But are people talking or is it just
they're talking, but then they're shooting.
Okay.
You know? It's a real generic, you know, I try to get out, they pulled me back in kind of story about a guy. He robbed a jewelry store. Judge sends him off to World War I to straighten him out. And if you go to World War I and come home alive, your charges will be dropped. And this will have never happened. He does. He comes back. The guys he did the heist with, they died. One of them has like a sister and her baby's kidnapped. And, you know, he's got to go back into the underworld, the mob people, the help. And here's what's good about it.
Who's in this? Anybody?
Edmund Lowe.
Don't know who that is.
He was a silent film star.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, and
how's his voice?
Good.
Okay.
In fact, he acted up until the 50s.
Oh,
great. As like a character actor. Like, they didn't quite know what to do with him.
Yeah.
After sound, I don't think anyone was as interested in him as a talking person as they were as a silent guy. I don't know much about him other than that seems to be the direction that his career went in. Here's what's great about it. The American vernacular of the 1930s, late 20s, 1930s, is on full display. And not just everyday vernacular, like tough guy talk, you know? So a lot of, why are you giving me the hi-hat kind of stuff? And, you know, people saying, scram, and literally, you dirty rat, you know? And you know, about the hats on and there's a lot of silent filmism happening in the movie as well. A lot of visual stuff that you would usually only see in silent films, like establishing shots of women so you can like take a gander, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. People singing through megaphones.
Oh, wow.
At fancy, you know, functions. Uh-huh. It's worth looking at for those things. Hmm. It's worth looking at as a historical object because it's from John Ford. He co-directed it with someone else whose name I'm blanking on right now. He did a lot like this in the 30s, you know, before stuff like Stagecoach came along. And so in the same way that I've been chronologically working my way through the filmography of Judy Garland, mm-hmm. this is a much more extensive filmography of a man who was incredibly prolific behind the camera that I've just sort of been working on the same way. Hmm. And I'm in early stages right now.
Yeah, clearly.
So this is just a fun project that I'm doing on my own time.
You will have seen a lot of Ward Bond by the time you're done.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm totally happy with it. I'm happy to go on this down this path.
No, that's a good pick.
Yeah,
he's got some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Do you have a DVD pick this week?
I do not. Yeah. We've been so busy Patreoning that I did not think about a DVD pick.
All right.
Although I did rewatch while you were at Sundance, and yes. I've probably recommended this before.
What do you got?
What do you think I have? I did rewatch Bresson's Diary of a Country Priest. You guys, you really need to watch Diary of a Country Priest. First, you need to read the book by Georges Bernanos, the French Catholic writer about a priest that is, what's the right word? Depressed and dying. Oh. He's young, and no one likes him. He is despised on every side. The other priests think he's, the older established priests think he's weak and a punk kid. The parishioners of his tiny parish, they think he's weak and ineffectual. No one likes him. The kids in the catechism class, they play tricks on him. It's very sad. He himself is down on his own faith. Like, he constantly talks about how he just cannot pray. He's worthless at praying. His stomach hurts all the time. Reason? He's got cancer. He doesn't know it.
Jesus.
But he's got cancer of the stomach. It is one of the most incredible books about faith that you will ever read. And you can be an atheist and totally be into this book. You could be an atheist and totally be into this film. Bresson himself was at least an agnostic, although steeped in Catholicism. Mm-hmm. And it's an early Bresson film so that you see kind of the signposts of where he's going aesthetically. Mm-hmm. But it has enough of that old-timey kind of French cinema aesthetic that it's not difficult. It's not austere.
Gotcha. And
that's a word that gets thrown around a lot with Bresson. I don't believe I've mentioned Bresson in about 6 months, so I think it's time. But while you were up at Sundance, I rewatched Diary of a Country Priest just because I wanted to. Like, I had made that lentil stew. That felt very French to me. So I was like, I'm going to eat this lentil stew and rewatch Diary of a Country Priest. It's available on DVD.
I think it's on Hulu Plus, an important film. All right.
And you should see it.
You know who else loves Diary of a Country Priest?
I don't know.
Paul Schrader. One of his favorite movies, even though he disagrees with you about The Assassin.
Look, he can disagree with me about The Assassin all day. I'm right.
Fine.
Too bad, Paul Schrader. I guess we can't be friends now, like we used to be.
My DVD pick this week is the Blu-ray debut of a comedy that I really like that has been, I think, fairly underrated, and that would be Up the Creek, the 1984 raft racing comedy with Tim Matheson and Stephen Frears.
You've definitely recommended this before.
Have I really?
Oh, yeah. We're both repeating ourselves with DVD.
Well, yeah, you're right. We've been Patreoning. But this is a new, it's new on Blu-ray. This is a new thing.
It's new on Blu-ray.
I love this movie.
And that's important.
Yes. It is, I think, it's weirdly late in the sort of post-Porky's cycle, and it's got, you know, one of the Porky's guys in it and two of the Animal House guys. And it's, you know, it's a later Sam Arkoff American International picture. But nonetheless, it has, I think, genuine wit to it. And Matheson has a lot of fun banter. And, yeah, it's a movie I get a kick out of. I think it's a lot of fun. And it's not as despicable as a lot of sort of TNA comedies from that period are. So, yeah, check it out. Check out Up the Creek. What do you got there? Oh, yes. Okay.
All right. Here's what's up. We have 24 letters that we have to read.
Yeah, I just sent you a
this
bunch.
May require us doing an all letters episode
again. Yeah. They're stacking up. They're circling the runway.
We had episodes with guests and no time to read letters and you know,
Sundance
stuff like that.
And, yeah.
But I'm going to read one
today
because we have to leave in 30 minutes to go to UCLA.
Right.
For the thing we're going to this afternoon.
Yes.
We're going to go see Roz Chast.
Yes.
Very exciting. This is one of your Christmas gifts.
Yes, I'm very excited.
I got you tickets to see Roz Chast read from her book or perform. I don't know what she's doing. She's a cartoonist, and she's reading from her book, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant?
Yes.
Which is a memoir, in a graphic novel memoir of her elderly parents and how she had to take care of them in their final
years.
So it's going to be fantastic because it's funny. It's funny, too. She's really funny. I've been sitting on this paper letter, I'm ashamed to say, since October 29th.
Whoa.
If we're going to clear the decks with letters,
we're going to start
with this one. My art film bro, Matt Severson, sent this letter to us. He included it in a DVD that he had shipped over to me, which is not
relevant.
It'll be relevant once I get through it and do the thing that I need to do with it, which is there's a book and it references the film, and I want to read the see the film before I read the book. You know. Anyway,
you and your projects. All right, go on.
I got things to do. I got projects that I have to attend to.
All right.
Anyway, October 29th. 2015. Dear Dave and Alonzo, happy 5th podcast anniversary.
Oh, thank you.
These are my top 15 films since the birth of the Linoleum Knife podcast in chronological order.
So between November 2010 and October 2015.
Correct.
Okay.
Number one, another year, 2010. Mike Lee.
Director. Oh, I love that one.
Isn't that great?
Yes.
It's a great movie.
Yes, yes.
Number two, Poetry. 2010.
Embarrassed to say I still haven't
seen it. Shandong Lee. Number three, Uncle Boonmi, Who Can Recall His Past Lives. 2010, A Pitch Up Pong, Where Is That the Cool? Yeah.
By the way, next week, remind me, I have three more Sundance movies that I saw at the festival since doing the episode with Bibbs. I'll talk about them next time.
Okay. Number four, This Is Not a Film.
Oh.
2011, Jafar Panahi.
Yeah.
Number five, The Touring Horse. 2011, Bela Tarr. Number six, Amour. 2012, Michael Haneke.
Yeah.
Number seven, The Act of Killing. 2012, Joshua Oppenheimer. And Christine Sin and Anonymous?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Eight, Holy Motors. 2012, Leos Carax. Number nine, The Master. 2012, Paul Thomas Anderson. Number 10, A Touch of Sin, 2013, Jia Zhangke. Number 11, Under the Skin, 2013, Jonathan Glazer. Number 12, Goodbye to Language, 2014, Jean-Luc Godard. Number 13, The Grand Budapest Hotel, 2014, Wes Anderson. Number 14, Stray Dogs, 2014, Chai Ming Lang. Number 15, The Assassin, 2015, Hu Xiaoshen. Congratulations, Matt Severson. You are 176% knife.
Even though there aren't any Melissa McCarthy movies on that list.
Spy. What about Spy?
I guess I'll let it go. This is why Matt is your art film bro. We talk about other things.
I mean, I have other art film bros too, but Matt's the one that gets out to theaters most often with me.
Yes.
You know, if Aaron didn't live in, dang it, Long Beach.
Yes.
And was like a 40-minute drive away, he'd be at me a lot more with these things. Because mm-hmm. He's always down for that. So's Chris. Mm-hmm. Also lives in Long Beach.
Yeah.
But
well, I'm glad that you have... This is one of the secrets to a successful marriage is knowing other... You can rely on other people...
Fob your partner off on other friends.
Not your husband that want to go to the certain things that maybe I don't want to.
We saw Horse Money together.
You and Matt did.
Matt and I did, yes. The movie that Manola said was...
Boring.
Boring.
Not a word she uses lightly.
No, she never says that kind of thing. And yeah. When she says it, she means it. And there are reasons.
Yeah.
I just really loved it.
All right, fine.
I wasn't bored at all.
Fine. All right. So instead of doing my usual parade of other podcasts and all of our stuff online, I'm just going to say again, patreon.com/linoleumknife.
Subscribing, you guys.
Go be one of our initial founder members.
From the time we started this podcast...
Mm-hmm.
Till now.
Yeah.
In the past hour.
Yeah.
We already have 9 subscribers.
Woo! And this show hasn't even gone live yet.
Yeah. We just posted this on Facebook and then sat down to record this. And we already have 9 subscribers in the course of recording this one podcast.
Very exciting. All right.
That's pretty great.
You guys are awesome.
Thank you, you 9 people.
Yes.
Whoever you are so
and
far.
There will be more of you by next week, I hope. All right. So we'll catch you guys next time. Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.